Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
We've been looking back at the 60th anniversary of the British invasion here, and today we go back to our visit with May Pang, who worked for John Lennon and Yoko Ono as a personal assistant. And when John and Yoko separated in 1973, May Pang and John began a relationship that lasted 18 months. Lennon called it his Lost Weekend. May's movie, called The Lost Weekend, is now streaming. We caught up with her at her photo exhibition in Chicago, and the first thing I wanted to know was, as a young girl, was she a big Beatles fan?
Are you kidding? Who wasn't? You know, at 13, when you see them on Ed Sullivan, I was so excited. Somebody new. It was great.
Did you have a favorite Beatle?
Yeah, I made the mistake of saying it also to John when he asked me that question. I wasn't thinking about at the moment. So he said, who was your favorite Beatle? I'm thinking I'm that 13-year-old girl. So I said, Ringo. And then I stopped and I realized what I had just done. And I turned around and I said, but you have to understand, it was 13, please. He goes, uh-huh.
Tell me about the first time you met John.
Wow. It was actually John and Yoko. I saw them at the bank of elevators at the building where I worked at Apple offices in New York. And all of a sudden, I get the call from one of the men in the office, the office manager, and he says, John and Yoko are in town. They're here to make two movies, two shorts, and they need people, and you're it.
And you're a very young girl at this point, aren't you?
Yes, I was, I was just turned 20.
How did you become the personal assistant to John and Yoko? That was 1973?
Well, it was even before that. So in 1970, I started working with them on these movies, and they kept asking me to come to do other things. So before my relationship with John, that's 3 years. So I was really working with them up to that moment.
Do you remember what you thought about Yoko back then?
You know what? I didn't think anything more than they were a couple that were creative. They were doing things. I worked on their albums. So, you know, it was fun. I didn't think anything more of it than that. It's busy.
What was Yoko thinking when she sent you off with John? And what was your initial reaction to that?
I can't tell you what she was thinking. I just thought, that was a crazy idea. I had been with them for 3 years. Why would I want to do this? You see it on a daily basis, what they were about. You know, they were busy. They had their own things. Everybody who worked around them at that moment knew that they were having issues. I didn't want to be a part of it. Just give me the job. Let me do my work. Let me go on. You know, so when she approached me about, oh, you don't have a boyfriend and we're not getting along, maybe you should go out with John, I thought she was a little off the wall there, and I kept saying no.
Did she have an inkling that John was attracted to you?
She might have. I had no idea. I really didn't. Because, you know, when you work on a daily basis, the rapport that I had was more from work, love of music. We had the same taste in music, and that's it. So I never thought in a million years, why would he be attracted? I've been with him for 3 years. Really?
So then you go off from New York to Los Angeles, correct?
Right. When John made the initial, here's the thing, everybody didn't realize it. It wasn't because Yoko snapped a finger and he went for it. He didn't even know that was going to happen. But when he did, he said, well, she kept insisting I was going to go for it. And I had no idea. So he actually, you know, came to me. And so when we finally got together, he said, you know, we need to spend time alone, not in this place. So we left New York on a whim. Everybody thought that she had no idea we were leaving town. In fact, it was John's lawyer that was in the Dakota talking to him about business. And John says, well, when are you leaving us tonight to go to L.A.? And he goes, well, we're going with you. And the lawyer just looked at us and he goes, okay. He goes, May, you got to go make the reservations. And we left that night.
Now, why is it in Beatles history this period, you and John together, is referred to as the Lost Weekend?
You know, that's when John, he was asked all the time about, you know, you and Harry getting drunk, getting into
Harry Nilsson.
Harry Nilsson. And, you know, getting drunk. So he referred to, and John likes to use the metaphors of the movies in those days, you know, I believe it was Ray Milland mm-hmm. called The Lost Weekend, mm-hmm. about a man who woke up drunk all the time. So that's what he did. And he said to me, he told me, he said, people are going to think it's about us, but it really isn't. I just used that.
Tell me about the moment it clearly became a love affair.
That's a blur line, and it just went, and we just had such a good time. We were in L.A., and he just wanted just to have fun and just enjoy all the different things. He was different, because in New York, he wasn't seeing people. They were very closed in. That was that household. And my household was, let's go out, and not to party, but to go meet your friends. And that's what we did.
But you certainly had an intimate relationship.
Oh, absolutely, we did. It was an interesting time, and our time together was just very warm, very open. People were seeing him that hadn't seen him in years.
In one of the interviews with you, I read you talk about the first time you made love to John and what you were thinking. Tell us about that.
Oh my God, I just couldn't believe that. At that time, the first time, I mean, I literally sort of got very emotional. And you know, I'm a young kid. And I said, I don't know where this is going. And he turned to me, and John said, I don't know either. But we're going to see this together. We're going to see it through together. Hmm. And I said, really? And he says, yes.
What part did you play in John's musical career at that point, his solo career, and the music he made when you two were together?
That was always the fun part. We spent a lot of time. He would say, what do you think of the songs? He would write them. He'd play them for me. I know a lot of people say, God, you're lucky, you know, because he would sit down with the guitar and he'd say, hey. So after the first night when we were intimate, the next morning he would just, he said, listen, come into my office. And I said, okay, what is it? We acted like nothing happened. He goes, I want to play you something. And he had me sit on the floor, and he picked up the guitar, and he played the bits of a song that would later turn out to be called Surprise, Surprise, Sweet Bird of Paradox. So that was the song he wrote for me.
Sweet Bird of Paradox, a typical John Lennon twist on a phrase, right?
Yes, absolutely.
How did you spend most of your time together? Any contact with the other Beatles during this period?
Well, like I said, in our household, it was an open door. In L.A., we saw a lot of people. We saw people like, we wanted to do an oldies album, so we saw Phil Spector, and John got to meet some of his idols and session players. He was so thrilled that we had Pete Condoli from the Johnny Carson show playing horn. Hal Blaine, the famous Hal Blaine.
From the Wrecking Crew.
Oh, yeah, from the Wrecking Crew. When we were starting this album, the rock and roll album, all he wanted to be was a singer in the band. Of course, we got Phil Spector at the time, and we thought, great, who else would it be? Well, he didn't tell us. We had 27 musicians that first night, and he wouldn't tell us who was there. So you had all the greats like Barry Mann, Jeff Barry, all the songwriters, you know. We even had Leon Russell. So part of the Wrecking Crew was in there. We even had Steve Cropper. It was just amazing, all the people.
And we hear your voice on a track, don't we?
Oh, you hear on The Walls and Bridges was just John's. Where we had a number one single, his only number one single in his lifetime, with a number one album. And the song was Number 9 Dream. And he wanted me to whisper his name. And then I got a chance to also sing with him to do the background vocals on the chorus. And I thought, why am I doing this? He goes, I want you out there to do this.
Mind Games was in that period, right?
Mind Games was before. It's the first one. It's 50 years ago, around now, when we started.
How and when did your time with John end?
That's been the myth, and that's been all these different rumors. It ended in February, the beginning of February of 75. And what had happened was Yoko had said to him, listen, I think it's a good time for you to come back because of immigration, because it was always ongoing. He was always afraid to be thrown out of the country, and he loved this country. So, you know, I said, really? He said, yes. I said, what does that mean? He says, nothing. It's just that I'm going to move back to the Dakota. And, you know, so that the lawyers for whatever, and that's where we're going to be. He goes, nothing else has changed. And I said, oh, I think so.
People talk about the time you spent with him being something like 18 months, but really you were in touch with him for a long time, weren't you?
Yeah, our relationship spanned 10 years. A lot of people don't realize that. From the time I started on those movies with him until the time he died, which he called me from South Africa. That was one of the last phone calls. It's 10 years.
From what I gather, your relationship wasn't just platonic, even when he went back with Yoko. Is that right?
That's true. It wasn't platonic. He told me many times how much he missed me. And it's just the circumstances was just difficult, and he was trying to figure it out.
He told one interviewer that his time with you was the happiest time of his life.
I know, and I didn't find out about that till much later.
So he goes back with Yoko, stays in touch with you, and you mentioned a call from South Africa. Talk about the last time you saw him, the last time you talked to him.
Well, the last time I saw him was probably a year and a half before that. He came over. And this is all, you know, Yoko didn't know any of this, but he came over and I said, what's going on? Because I just needed to see you. And, you know, we would talk, we spent hours. And then at the end of our time being there, he would say, what songs are you listening to? We always talked about music. And he goes, I just heard this song that always reminds me of you. And I said, what song is that? So he started to hum it. And I said, so weird. Someone asked me just the same about that same song a few days ago. So I pulled it out and I said, is it this song? And I put it on the record player. It's vinyl. Remember that? And it was. And it was the song Reminiscing by the Little River Band. And I said, why this song? He goes, every time I hear the lyrics and the words, he goes, it reminds me of you.
Hmm. Sweet. Talk about the difference between the public John Lennon and the private John Lennon. So much has been written about him, so many books, documentaries. What is it that you know about him that we don't know? Are we missing anything?
You know what? John was a very insecure person. A lot of people think that, you know, yeah, he was positive. He was just out there, you know, and he had that strong attitude. Yes, on certain things. But he was also still very nervous when he wrote his lyrics. He would say, do you think this sounds good? Do you think if I did this? And I mean, one of the last times that when John and I was sitting at home, and this is like in early 75, Paul and Linda, a lot of people didn't realize, they were always visitors in our apartment in New York, and came by and said, oh, we're about to do a new album, which of course subsequently became Venus and Mars. But we're going down to New Orleans. And John said, really? New Orleans? He goes, yeah, we're going to go down there and, you know, and do the album there. He goes, oh, okay. After they left, like the next morning, I remember John's just fiddling with his guitar. And he says, I got to ask you something. And I had my back to him as I'm working on the floor, you know. And I said, what? He goes, what would you think if I wrote with Paul again? And I just swung my head around like The Exorcist, you know. And they had just signed all the contracts, all the agreements to, you know, the dissolution of the Beatles. And I said, well, this is interesting. And I said, of course, it would be great. He goes, but why? And I said, because, you know, solo-wise, you guys wrote wonderful songs. But together, no one could beat you on those words, the music. You got it. He goes, yeah, you're right. And I knew that he wanted, he goes, you know, I knew he wanted to go down to New Orleans. I knew he loved New Orleans. He says, oh, it's a great place. He goes, I want us to go there. And I knew that if I got him down to New Orleans, I knew he would write with Paul. It was that close.
What happened?
And then the unfortunate for me, he went back to the Dakota.
It sure sounds like there wasn't much friction between John and Paul even after the breakup.
There wasn't any. We saw them quite often. In fact, they were our first house guests at our new apartment. It was just a great time. We spent a lot of time with them in New York. John got a chance to spend time with, I call, his brothers.
Also, part of the John Lennon history is he wasn't a very good father, but you have a wonderful picture of John and Julian. It's very sweet, and it sure looks like they have a pretty good relationship at this point.
You know, I know people have said that, and it's true. You know, he would even say it. He thought that Cynthia did an amazing job of raising Julian. But I knew in my heart that I couldn't let John not see his son or Julian not see his father. It had been 3 years. I also knew that Cynthia, his ex-wife, had not had any closure with John after their divorce. So I thought, if I can do something, here it is. And the opportunity presented itself to me, and I was able to make it work. And Julian loved hanging out with his father. And John finally saw a different side of Julian. And he kept coming around. I would make sure he would call him every weekend, wherever we were. I said, it's time to call Julian. And having that closure with Cynthia made it so much easier that John could actually talk to Cynthia without feeling that angst that I got to talk to her. You know, the ex-wives, the ex-husbands, it's always difficult.
And Julian ended up using that picture you took of him as a little boy on his album.
On his latest album called Jude. And, he wrote me a note and he says, do you have any photos of me back then? And I sent him a bunch and he goes, I love this. He had never seen it. So it was great. It was wonderful. You know, in the documentary, I talk about all of this in my new documentary that people will see, hopefully.
So, yes, fast forward now. You travel around the country with your terrific photos, this documentary. Hopefully we'll get to see that stream here very soon if we didn't get to see it in the theater. Why did it take so long for all this to happen?
You know, I wasn't ready. I was still a young kid. You know, I can't believe right now me putting out the photos and we're talking about mind games. It's 50 years, and I feel like, oh my God, I don't realize it's 50 years. But I want the world to see the John I saw. I want people to see the shy. There's a shyness to him. Although that if you got on his bad side, that sharp tongue would come out, and I didn't want to be at the other end of that. But you know what? He was just, it was John. And so the pictures that I put out for people to see, this is the John that you're seeing through my eyes. He's not posed. He's not. He'll pose for me if I say turn, you know, but it's not a real pose. It's not a photo session. It's not anything. So he liked it that he used to say, take us whatever you want. So that's why I had all these different photos and, you know, at home shots, you know, and the cat sucking on his jumper, as I would say, you know. He loved his kittens that we got from the rec plant, you know. Mm-hmm. He just enjoyed it.
Now, can we finally say your favorite Beatle is John and not Ringo?
Oh, I guess so. I guess we could say that now. You know, John, do you hear that? You are my favorite, definitely.
Thanks, May.
Thank you.